And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your source for Starfinder's news and interviews. I'm Alexander Agunis. I'm No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James.
Hi, I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
Yeah, so we're coming at you like the first week of March this time instead of like, you know, at our normal time at the end of the month for February, because I had a root canal and I was in incredible pain last week. So we're here and we're having fun.
Yeah, yeah. We had a stream that the Positive Developers went through and explained some Starfinder 2E products upcoming that I really wish there was an accompanying blog post, but you know.
Yeah, we're sitting here trying to prepare for this show because James and I both watched the stream that we're about to reference a whole bunch of times. And we were like, where's the blog post? Where, they usually compile all this information in a blog post. It's very helpful. It wasn't there this time. Thirsty just he's sitting there laughing in his chair going, good, good.
Just made us rely on our memories, and that's disgusting.
Oh, God.
Terrible.
Yeah, you know, as we know in Starfinder, where you're supposed to augment everything, relying on the meat flesh is weak. We should have blog posts. But there's a lot of really good information about Starfinder and about general changes over in Paizo Land. I know, didn't Jenny say she has a new title now?
Yeah, I think she's the lead product line. I forget the name of the specific term, but I think she's the head of that team now. And also that they're hiring for another Starfinder developer.
Yeah, 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 definitely. From what I understand, Thirsty is like, based on the title that he gave and that now appears under his name on the chat, he's like Eric Mona's right-hand man now. And Jenny is basically the position that Thirsty was in previously. And now they're looking to hire another Starfinder developer. So if you think you have the chops to do that, you should definitely apply and go do that. That's pretty cool. It's nice to see the Starfinder team people moving up on in the world. I don't know about how you feel about it, James, but like I always felt that the Starfinder setting and lore kind of spoke to me more than the Pathfinder stuff. So like I'm really excited about this.
That's a hard one. I feel like the Starfinder lore has more for me to go off of personally, but the base Pathfinder lore I think is really good. I don't know about the second edition Pathfinder lore, but the first edition stuff is, there's some good stuff there.
There's been stuff in the second edition lore that I've liked. There's also been stuff that I haven't been too crazy about, but that was true in first edition too for Pathfinder. And I'm sure that the same will be true in Starfinder. As you know, as long as they double down and make sure that everybody knows that my theory that the Pact Worlds is a dystopia is accurate, I'll be happy. That's all I want.
I mean, that's like a pet project thing. Speaking of lore and setting, they did also announce that they were doing a Starfinder novel.
Yeah. I'm very excited. So from what I understand, based on the episode, the novel is like split timelines. There's like one story in the book that is going on like in the early days of the gap with an android waking up just after the gap has happened. And then while that's going on, the new iconic mystic, Chick-Chick, who is it Keskadi is his dad's name? Keskadi, right? The mystic.
Yeah, he was the old one, yeah.
Yeah, Keskadi's kid, Chick-Chick, is looking through these chronicles with Dai, the new Patra Solarian. And they're like learning about this person. And I kind of got the vibe that the past story is like what they're reading in the present. But that seems pretty cool to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad to get more novelizations. Getting into Battletech, one of the bigger draws of that whole scene is just that there's so many novels that A, drive the story forward, and B, explore prior parts of the setting, and really have served as an expansion of the setting. And having that, like, it feels good to get into a setting that way, besides just everything being gameplay related.
Yeah, it's nice to have real, like, a story and not just, like, lore. I think it's important to know that, like, a story is not the same as lore.
Yeah, you know, lore is like, you think of like Warhammer 40K codexes or in core rule books where you get little snippets of people, and you might figure out through scenarios a little bit who they are, but most stories tend to put you in people's minds as well as in what they do. Just using a character as an example, like there was a character for the Jade Falcons, Malvina Hazen. She was a terrible war criminal, but the novelization of her helped you get into the mindset of who is a crazy person and not a not crazy person. The books don't try to make her seem nice, but try to get you her angle where you might not have gotten that through the source books.
Wait, pause that, rewind this. You're talking like you've actually read this Battletech book.
No, I've had somebody describe it to me.
Okay, good, good. I wanted to say, because like one of my core traits for James is that James does not like fully reading a book if he can help it. And I was like, wait,
I don't want to read.
Like, I was like, you like this enough that you're going to read it? I assumed that I was going to have to read this book and tell you about it on stream or something.
There is also going to be an audiobook component, and I will do audiobooks. It's just for sitting down and reading pages, unless I have to, I don't want to, because I can't do other things while I'm doing it. It locks me into one activity.
Well, I mean, you can't be in your workshop making, like, you know, I don't know, the next wooden board that we're going to chuck axes at your birthday if you're sitting there reading a book. I get it.
Yeah, 100%. Or the blacks or the bells for the blacksmith forge or anything like that. It's too limiting.
Now, the real question is, are you going to finally make that abacus you keep threatening to make at Pathfinder Night?
The big Pathfinder abacus? Because I already made the small Battletech one. Oh. Pathfinder abacus is on the that's very low on the priority list there.
But you know what? That's the one I'm the most excited for.
It'll be better than my first abacus, I can tell you that.
That's fair. Speaking about things that'll be better than things we've had before, they've introduced a new adventure concept in this stream that I'm really excited about. Have you seen the stuff about Murder in Metal City?
That was the 64-page first level adventure, correct?
Yeah, it's like their deluxe adventure that is like super long and in depth. It looks like it's a murder mystery in on Aukturn, which is why it's the Metal City. Which I, you know, I'm on one hand, I'm like, you're gonna make me do a level one adventure for 64 pages, but on the other hand, I'm like, I am interested. Like the adventure was kind of sold as being in like a box component, sort of like a beginner's box, but they were very clear to say that it's not a beginner's box product. I think that the reason for that is typically that when Paizo does a beginner box, they want to make sure to have initial data on how people interact with the game. And so like they know how to properly teach people. So in almost every game that they've done, whether it's first edition Pathfinder, first edition Starfinder, or second edition Pathfinder, the beginner box has come out at least 2 years later. Obviously, the beginner box for Pathfinder first edition came out much later than that. But the Starfinder one came out about a year or two later. I remember chatting with Owen before once at one of our many design chats where I sit down with my friend Owen and we just talk. And Owen Casey Stevens has told me that the beginner box is one of the most labor intensive projects that you could possibly do. So I imagine they're not going to want to do that and make all these other things that they keep telling us about at the same time.
I mean, they say that, but they also mentioned that they're going to put a bunch of like beginner help modules in there, like things to help track investigations and all that. Also, I do want to say, I believe it was Avalon, not Aukturn.
You're right. It was Avalon. Avalon is the robot one. Aukturn is the one with the baby inside. No, Apostate is the one with the baby inside it. There's a lot of Aukturn A's.
Aukturn's just kind of the gross one. Avalon is Robot Mercury.
Yeah. And Apostate is the one that just exploded with the god inside of it, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, cool. There's a lot of A's. I'm glad they blew one of them up.
No. Aukturn was the egg one.
Oh, Aukturn was the egg one. Apostate is the one with all the drow on it.
The drow one, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. See, this is why it was good that they got rid of one of these A planets, because uninhabitable planet with bad stuff with A was taken three times.
just a lot of design overlap.
Just a lot of design overlap.
At least it's not a bunch of X's and Z's.
Yeah. I don't know how you feel about it. I'm pretty pumped about Murder in Metal City. I think it looks interesting. It kind of reminds me of, do you remember that one adventure that we played in Scranton that I really liked? The one with where you played, I think you played I played my Venara gunslinger. I don't remember what you played.
I remember that one. The Drowned Seers of the Drowned something.
I remember it was in Isgur.
Yeah.
It's for those of you who don't know, Paizo used to do like here's a location, here's like three scaling adventures that are in that location. And if you play it in Pathfinder Society or Starfinder Society play, you basically do them all at the same level. So we would literally sit down to one of these special adventures and like play one in an afternoon and end up with like level three characters in Society play out of it, which was really cool.
Oh, and Gallows of Madness. That's that one.
Gallows of Madness. That was it. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of that, where you can play the whole thing at level one and have like a really good experience out of it. Like, I'm cautiously optimistic for Murder in Metal City.
Yeah, I it might just be something that's not for me, but I'll have to see it. But I enjoy leveling up. I know there's people that don't like leveling up.
Oh, I love leveling. I live for it.
I like, that's the thing. I don't know the trajectory of somebody who's getting into the game that doesn't want to become stronger in ways beyond just levels. So hopefully they at least give benchmarks or guides for how to adjust fights in case people want to do that. Because 64 pages at first level is a, you're gonna have a hard time, I think, with varieties of encounters.
I may be different people listening who've played Pathfinder Second Edition will disagree with me. I think that Pathfinder Second Edition is actually kind of boring build wise until about level three, like when you have three levels of stuff to really do. And that's not talking about the play feel, because different people are going to like or dislike the level of heavy balance that Second Edition has. But at least in terms of like having choices and making an interesting build, it kind of reminds me more of D&D 5e, where like, in 5e, you don't get to pick your class feature archetype choice thing until level three. And like, and everyone's like, oh, in Pathfinder, you make your choices at level one. And it's like, yeah, but you don't have enough to make a meaningful, like diverse character that plays differently until level three. So it's like, it kind of is the same, but being different. I'm going to get like totally reamed across the coals for that one.
I mean, people like their choices. I mean, a lot of people are coming from games like 5e where they, you know, it's coming from 1e versus 5e.
God, it's, let me tell you, I'm in a 5e game right now, and we just switched over from the 2014 edition to the new 24 edition. And I was playing a monk. God bless me. I don't know why I thought this would be like super like cool build, because like there's literally one choice they made at first level and nothing else. And like we just got to the point where like my deflect arrows ability is now deflect attacks, where I can parry anything, and if I reduce your damage to zero with my ability, then I punch you back. And like I was like, oh my god, there's a choice, there's interaction, I'm so excited, because that's not a thing you get very often as a marshal in that game. But we've already seen from Starfinder that that's not the case. Starfinder has like a fair bit of choice, it seems.
Yeah, even at first level, I'm getting together a game for people that have like never played Starfinder.
Yeah,
just to kind of get into the 2E system a bit.
Sure.
And having to explain to them what things do and why things do, because they're mostly people coming from games like 5E. They're like looking at the magic characters and going, "This is cool, but I'm afraid of it." And it's like, "Don't be afraid of it. We can be stupid together."
Yeah, that's something that so many gamers are afraid of. They're afraid of like not knowing how something works and making the wrong choice. And it's like, sometimes you play Fallout and you just don't realize that plasma weapons are the optimal damage per section. That's fine. You know, sometimes you just start playing Skyrim and you don't realize that like you don't need weapons if you just go stealth bow. Like, it's fine. You learn the choices as you go.
Yeah, it's not about being optimal. It's about having fun in the story, right? You don't have to win the game. You have to winning is playing and having a good time.
Definitely, definitely. Now, I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like in that stream, the thing they really talked about the most was the upcoming Galaxy Guide book. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that was, I kept going over features and going, that was a book. And then you would remind me, nope, that's part of the Galaxy Guide.
Yeah, like literally Galaxy Guide has so much stuff in it that every time James talked about it, we were like, are we sure this isn't like their species book? Because like Pathfinder for second edition had like the ancestry guide. Are we sure this isn't a species guide or something? Oh, no, this is Galaxy. Okay. Galaxy is just looking to do everything before the book even comes out. Like the game won't be out yet, but Galaxy Guide will be here.
Yeah, it's like six new archetypes, new ancestries. I know they're also talking about playtest for classes. I don't think they'll be in this book, but they'll be in the next one, right?
So the playtests for the classes, they mentioned that there's going to be a book coming out that'll have the Technomancer and the mechanic in it. And so there's going to be a playtest for those at some point. It sounds like they had to push it back. Man, oh man, there sure is a lot of adventure and a lot of content coming out. I bet that's why they had to push it back, because they're like, even second edition Pathfinder didn't have playtest classes for the game before the core rulebook came out, you know? So like the speed at which they are trying to make sure that this game lands is pretty hasty.
You know, that's one thing that I kind of took out of this is even if I find some things about the 2E system that this thing is inherently linked to, and thankfully the stream kind of just said that out loud, which I appreciate, is at least they're trying to do it big. Like, they're not just trying to get through it. It looks like they're really trying to make it stick as something separate but part of the whole Pathfinder 2nd edition canon.
You know, as someone who's been covering news and interviewing Paizo devs about this game since that it came out, I think one thing that is very safe to say is that especially in the last, like, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, not even like when the second edition was announced, like before that, this game has kind of felt like it's been on maybe, I don't know, life support as a negative connotation, but kind of life support, like, it's like almost like an obligation, like somebody who is phoning in an article on a blog because they feel like they have to and not because they want to. And at least like with this new team and this new direction and this new addition, I really feel like, oh, wow, this is a team that is passionate and is looking to do really crazy things. And, you know, man, maybe this won't be like the game system that I love and cherish forever, but at least I know that they're going to like keep this system and this storytelling universe alive. And like there's ambition here. I haven't felt like there's been ambition in Starfinder for a long time.
Yeah, ambition and consistency, because I know for a lot of it, they would have they had a lot of people leave to go other places. They had a lot of corporate readjustment of people, so
yeah,
always had kind of like a rotation even from the game start of developers and people overseeing those projects. So this has been, I think, probably the most consistent team in a while.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Thirsty is moving up to his new role, and so like that means Thirsty is technically off the team. Thirsty is the most senior person there. He has been doing Starfinder since Starfinder Society first edition, the very first season, you know. But also, if you're going to leave the Starfinder team to be in charge of the company and make sure that the team that you cultivated has a say at the planning table, I think that's fine. You know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And just from all the conversations that we've had with Thirsty, it's very clear that he's very invested in the Starfinder universe. And like, you know, you listen to them talking about Galaxy Guide, and it's so clear that like, there's like care and there's effort. Like one of the things you had mentioned, James, is that there's like 6 new species. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you want to mention what they are real quick?
Yeah, they were Astrozoan, which were the amoeba people, contemplatives, who are brains, dragonkin, Kala, which were the fish people, Sarkeesian, which were a race that I'd never seen anybody play. and Vlaka, the wolf people.
Didn't Robin have a Sarkeesian? I feel like she had one. I could be wrong, though.
I don't know. Sarkeesians look like Kif from Futurama, but with giant butterfly wings.
Oh, that is a really accurate way to describe them. Yeah, that's really... one small correction. The Astrozoans look like starfish, not like amoebas.
Oh, am I thinking of the... what am I thinking of?
I don't know. There's like over 100 species in Starfinder, James. I think it's totally valid. Like if you mix them up.
Yeah, yeah. I can be wrong.
I'm wrong. But I just like, you look at that list and you're like, oh wow, like this is a list that is very clearly like going after some of the big fan favorites. You know, like obviously you're gonna do Dragonkin. People love their dragons. I feel like Vlaka have been really popular. You've got Astrozoans, which is like kind of ambitious that you're going to launch with a shapeshifter species. Pretty cool. I like that. And then you have Sarkeesians, who I guess you're allowed one yawn choice. That's fine. But then you have the, oh my gosh, the Kalos, who are the cool underwater species. And that's like, oh, hey, you could do an underwater adventure here, which is cool. And that roster is very seeped in the pack worlds. So if the core rulebook feels like it has a complete like roster of the Vescarium, except for the Ishtikari is obviously the best one, but
give me my squid billies.
You just gotta wait. But like, it feels like they're like, oh yeah, these are all things we probably wanted to do core and just didn't have space for, you know? So yeah, I'm pretty pleased with the list and the roster. Did they give us a list of the archetypes?
Yeah, Abadar rep, so you can be a corporate suit, space pirate, which is feels more like a job than an archetype, but okay. Hell Knight, also more of a job than an archetype. Knight of Galarian, also more job than an archetype. Also, all of these are jobs. All of these. Except Xenodruid.
That's so archetypes in second edition are very different from archetypes mm-hmm. in first edition, where they're designed to kind of be more general. And in second edition, they often are like, I'm part of an organization. Here are my abilities for that organization. I think that is for better or for worse. I think a lot of those would be really tough to take out of the Starfinder setting if you wanted to go somewhere else. But I also think that, like, maybe that's the point. The space pirate is definitely the most generic of them, but even the space pirate was described as having, like, you have a void cutlass, and the cutlass, like, has void slashes and it goes through people, and like they've got a capstone ability that they talked about on one of the streams where the space pirate can press gang someone's soul into serving them after they beat you. Yeah, so like if a space pirate kills you, then they can press gang your soul into working for them for a turn, where it works like your soul becomes a wisp ally for like a turn or two. Which That's is pretty cool.
I think Space Pirate you could probably drop into a normal like Pathfinder setting and do good. Also, I think Hell Knight is a very fun one to probably go back into a Galarian setting.
Yeah, definitely. I think that one is going to feel very familiar. I'm curious to see how much the Starfinder Hell Knight feels like the Pathfinder Hell Knight, because if cross compatibility is a selling point of this game, then it might be odd to have two Hell Knight options. I kind of hope that they line up well enough that it works. Like, I'm very weird about this game, because on one hand, I'm very like, oh, this has to be its own system. It's got to feel unique. You need the options. Put them in here. But then also it's like, well, if that is off the table, like if I can't have a totally unique experience, then I would want the things that have to overlap as cleanly as possible. Does that make sense?
No, I get you. I will say there was three different Hell Knight archetypes and two or three different Hell Knight prestige classes, and all of them were very different.
Yeah, they were. In 2E, they're doing this thing where, like, you have a base Hell Knight archetype, and mm-hmm. then, like, if you want to be a signifier, that's not necessarily a separate archetype. There are signifier options in the base Hell Knight, which is pretty cool. Okay. So I don't know if you read through the description for each of the species. Obviously, James and I have been playing this game forever. Like, literally, the game came out, James and I got back from PaizoCon, and James started Dead Sons, like, that Sunday. And but the descriptions are very interesting, because, like, a lot of them are, like, they're very much like what was in Starfinder. Like, you read Astrozoan, where on the blog they say, a shapeshifter who physically reshapes their own anatomy using specialized musculature rather than magic to change forms. Sometimes they don't get all the details of the change quite right. See if you can spot all the Astrozoans in this book, which is like, that's all stuff that's been in the game before. Like, the fact that they can shapeshift, it's not magical. They can change by moving their bodies around. That's all been in the game forever. But then you read the Vlaka. And for those who don't remember, in Starfinder First Edition, the Vlaka were like the husky wolf people. And one of their core things was that you had to pick whether your character was inherently blind or deaf or both, right? And they had to rely completely on their smell, their sense of smell. And so you read this description. It says, a wolf-like nomad from La Joke with an incredible sense of smell and unusual sensory adaptations. And then the next sentence says, Vlakas who witness the rebirth of their dying son, Sota, are marked with starburst patterns that match their natural blessings to kindle light. What does that mean? What is that? I don't know. Apparently, this son was dying, and then suddenly it just wasn't dying anymore. We got a lore drop in a blog just randomly. Cool.
Yeah.
You know? And
I also think it's funny that they launched Dragonkin without Triaxians. It's like, way to be second fiddle on your own planet named after you.
It's very true. Listen, we all know that Triaxis is for the dragons. We played Random Winter. We know. It's
fine. They'll probably come in some splat book, probably, but Versites, I miss them. They're just like weird dudes, but I miss them.
Well, you know what? The Versites are the ones that are like really into augmentation, right?
Yeah, some of them.
So,
most of them.
So if I was gonna, if I remember Thirsty saying in one of the streams that their plan was to try to put species that make sense into every book, right? Mm-hmm. Now, wouldn't, I also noticed that SRO isn't on this original list. And I feel like SRO is something people would expect because like C-3PO, R2-D2, you know?
Also the adventure path on Avalon.
Yeah, and the adventure path on Avalon, exactly. But we also know that the two playtest classes we're getting are going to be the mechanic and the technomancer, which are very tech focused. So like, what if in that tech book we get something like the SRO and the Versites that are like all, oh, we're going to be tech dudes, because like those are kind of the species that are in, are the ancestries that you are inherently like about technology. I think that would be pretty cool, to be honest with you. Yeah. We'll have to wait and see what ends up happening, but I do think that there's sort of like, one of the things that I've thought, and one of the things that makes me feel like this team is really going to be good for this, because I tell me, so far, ever out of everything you've seen, have you felt like, even if the mechanics weren't something you've really liked, it's felt very true to what the ideas were in Starfinder First Edition? Like thinking about like what the classes are and the ancestries, yeah?
Yeah, Soldier was one that I think took a little while to get into, but if the idea is control, it's just changing where that control comes from.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the big things is that, like, it kind of felt like the Soldier is interesting to me because, like, that first draft really felt like they took a stab at it, like the Pathfinder first, the second edition team would take a stab at it, where I don't mean this as shade. I love the Pathfinder teams, but the Pathfinder team, when second edition first came out, seemed like they were much more interested in like a refresh. They wanted things to feel new and different. And so like a lot of times they would design classes or ideas in ways that were a departure from what they had been in first edition. A good example, you haven't played the game system, but they actually took the Summoner and the Spiritualist and combined it into one class called the Summoner. And the Phantom is just like an undead Eidolon option, essentially.
I think that's fine. That's yeah, probably
totally. But it's definitely a reimagining, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and like, I don't think that one is wrong, but if you were someone who like being a spiritualist and having that be your thing and having all of those special powers based on being bonded with a weird ghost was the thing you liked about that class, the base summoner doesn't have most of that. Like you just have the Phantom and that's kind of it. You would have to have like the occult spell list. But you look at Starfinder, and especially starting with all the feedback the fandom gave about the Soldier, and it's like, oh, people want us to try to make this as faithful, not only to just have the name, but have the concept still work. I feel like I could take most of my characters in Starfinder and figure out ways to port them into Starfinder Second Edition without too much trouble, where Kodahan, my Blood Rager, doesn't work in Second Edition at all. Like, I had to make him an exemplar to be close.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything that I had from First Edition that wasn't just something that doesn't exist here that wouldn't be replicatable. I think the fact that they did so much to update Witch Warper and still have it feel the same is, and maybe procedurally work better, I think is a real big win for a second edition.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that like that attempt to draw in the new fans with like the shiny new three action system and the cross compatibility combined with a genuine love and care for the originals, the original edition, is what's going to make this transition a lot smoother than the transition from First Edition Pathfinder to Second Edition Pathfinder. A lot of people are going to say stuff like, oh, First Edition Pathfinder, the rules were so different going in, but Starfinder was already the halfway point. But like, I don't think that's true. I think that there's a level of care and respect that has to go into an edition changes story, that both in terms of like the story that the game mechanics are telling and the setting is telling. I think that second edition story was fine in terms of like the lore on the change. It was definitely no spell scar in fourth edition, where Wizards of the Coast decided to just kill half of the gods in the Forgotten Realms with this major event. I am getting a good vibe out of it. And so what do you think of the most interesting thing we know about Galaxy Guide is so far? I've told you mine.
I don't know. Because I haven't started playing in earnest and figuring out these things, I don't know exactly what to be excited for because I don't know what I feel like I'm missing. I don't really care about archetypes. I'm going to be honest, especially when they're job titles. Like, it gives you cool stuff, whatever, fine. I don't need to like everything. Ancestries, cool. They're cool things. I know they're coming. Maybe some more of the lore, and I think narrative spaceship combat's supposed to be in this as well. Is that correct?
I believe we were told that narrative spaceship combat is going to be in the next book that we're going to talk about. Okay. Yeah. But I imagine that if they were going to do starships, they'd probably either be in their own book or they would be in a book with the mechanic and the technomancer.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking just the narrative, just because they seem to have talked about something that seemed interesting. Because I do want to see where they're leading into. Just because I still feel like there's going to be a disconnect between people that want to do Starship Combat and people that don't. And that's fine. I eagerly await the second edition rules that try to remedy that. But the narrative, I think, is the intermediate point there.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, in Teenage Wasteland, it's the game I've been running for forever. I gave them one Starship Combat. And then when they asked me about making their own starship and customizing that, I gave them the rule book. And I was like, this is really complicated. And if you want me to run a game next week, you guys are going to have to read it and do it yourselves because I can't do this for you. And then within 5 hours of that day, they said, we're actually not too interested in Starship Combat anymore. And I was like, all right. I was like, we'll just do checks if I ever need to have someone firing at you, or I just won't do it. And that has been kind of the thing. And nobody has asked me for Starship Combat again after the ones we did. It was great. I shot a nuke at them. They still won that fight, but I shot a nuke at them. And that wasn't enough.
Good on them. Good on them. Maybe just the faction introductions to see what changes happen with factions over the setting update. Like,
definitely.
What happened to things that remained from the swarm, if anything remains, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, I feel like what we know about Attack from the Swarm is that the swarm wasn't like defeated or destroyed in that adventure. Sure. It sounds like one invasion colony was defeated, but like I imagine the swarm is probably still a threat. There are a lot of little things that I'm interested in, but I also feel that with the exception of the Drift Crisis adventures, a lot of the Starfinder First Edition adventures were much smaller in scope. Like Pathfinder First Edition and Second Edition have this tendency of every adventure ends with you needing to save Galarian from some horrible threat, right? That really wasn't true in any of the adventures we played in Starfinder. Like if you saved the galaxy, it was so far in the background that the average person doesn't know about it. Like I would say, without giving spoilers, that's kind of the ending of Dead Sons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or
you don't get the Mass Effect moment where just like you're on the Citadel and then, oh no, it's the big aliens and they're here and everything's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, we did, James and I did, Signal of Screams, and that one kind of ends with you just like, alone in the shadow plane.
It's just like, yep, we stopped the weird things from happening.
Yeah.
I guess we go home.
Listen. For me, that adventure was I avenged my dead husband. I got justice for Pip.
I don't know what I did. I did a bunch of stuff, but you know, I had a good time.
It was a very fun adventure. But like, that's kind of the thing with Starfinder. You don't have this like big moment where you just saved the galaxy. You beat the empire. You just kind of have these really small stories. And I think I think that's why, like in the video that they did for Twitch streams, they talk more about like the effects of the Drift Crisis and the events of Cosmic Birthday as the big things that have shaped the setting going into second edition, because I don't really know what else could have possibly shaped that. Like there isn't a whole lot of like honestly, Starfinder Society shaped things up more than the Adventure Paths did in first edition.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think when you put it through society, it allows people to feel like they have some ownership of it.
Yeah, definitely. And you give them the opportunity of being able to decide like how the adventure goes, like with their system of being like, did you do this? Check this box. And they look at everything and they use that to decide what happened overall. That's not something you could do in an adventure path. It reminds me a lot more of like what I do in my home games, where I watch and what the things my players like engage with and how they engage with it, and I adjust the story to reflect that.
Yeah. Because especially when you get to those big story decisions, people like to feel included as part of it. Mm-hmm. When they did that first Starfinder special, and we were the only people to cheer for that one outcome, I was like, oh man.
Yeah, that was fun. It was like literally you and me and nobody else.
It's just like our table.
And I want everyone to remember James and I played this game in Gen Con's banquet hall. Like there were like hundreds of other people. And so like I don't even it was the outcome of cheering for what's his name? Janora? No, not Janora.
No, for Jad. It's for the rat person. The Isoki.
Oh, for her to go in and have like the valiant like fight, right?
Yeah.
and everyone's like, what are you doing? She's gonna die. I'm like, but that'd be so cool. She did it for her kids. Can you imagine the emotional payoff for the entire season? And everyone's like, we don't want Rat Grandma to die. And we're like,
yeah, but it's good TV.
But it's so cool. But yeah, no, James and I were the only ones who cheered for her to get her big moment that she said she wanted to do. We were like, yeah, we support you. And everyone else was like, no, you can't do it.
That might be a consequence of our dumb way of playing these games, which is just like, I search for a good death. The only thing I search for.
Well, I mean, like, we do that a lot, though, because like sometimes you just put the impossible odds in front of James and me and our friends, and like we're like, well, I guess there's nothing for us to do but the impossible thing. We better go do it. And like, yeah. Like literally,
nah,
we
I'd were win. Playing,
we were playing our first edition Pathfinder game, and like apparently we were supposed to give this idol to like this evil like demonic demigod so it could put it back, and then like that's how the adventure was supposed to end. But like none of us could speak with him, and he just came at us with his like hands like bared, ready to attack us, and then he just started attacking us, and we're like, okay, guess we're fighting this. And then we ended up beating like a CR 15 encounter at like level 10.
Level nine.
Yeah, we were level nine.
Yeah, we just gave him the business because it was like, what else do we do? I guess incredible violence.
That's all we had. We had incredible violence and my ridiculous number of channel energies. It's so good. I love my build. But yeah, so I guess like closing thoughts on the Galaxy Guide. I'm pumped for it. It makes me excited. I definitely want to see more generic archetypes in the core book lines, like whatever book that the Technomancer and the Mechanic are in. I hope it has some stuff that isn't quite so setting specific, but I like what we're getting, and it makes sense. You know, it definitely makes sense as good choices. Now
I like it. I like it as a precursor to other books, like stuff that is like Starship Combat. Also the there's going to be books that have optional rules that are just for Starfinder that they mentioned. So if you want to make your game even more separate from Pathfinder Second Edition, so I'm excited for those.
Yeah, I'm excited for that too. I also think it's really interesting that like you could technically play the Starfinder setting without the Starfinder rules on the day that this book comes out. Like technically you could make a Starfinder campaign and just play like a fighter instead of a soldier, and play like a cleric instead of a mystic. Like you can do it. Nothing's stopping you. You just wouldn't have the official rules for like guns and stuff yet, which I don't know. I think guns are worth waiting for, but whatever, each their own.
You wouldn't have the gunslinger guns, but you'd have fire. You know, like you're in a setting that has guns.
True. Now, speaking of the second, or I guess technically third book, if you count the storybook that we were told about, that's GM Core. No, we were told about another one after GM Core too. We were talking about it earlier, yeah?
Yeah, I believe it was player. There was a player core after that as well.
Well, Player Core is the one that has like all the player bait main rules in it. And then GM Core is like the GM focus book. And then I believe there was did they announce like an alien book? Is it Alien Core?
Yeah. It was like a bestiary.
Yeah. I don't remember whether it was called Alien Core or Bestiary or Alien Archive. They officially confirmed that there will be a monster book essentially coming out. So let's talk a little bit about the GM book. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't remember them saying a ton about this book. Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't go super in depth with it.
Yeah, I think the one big thing that I remember them saying was that Starship Combat wasn't going to be in it, and it was going to have a updated variant of the narrative Starship Combat rules from Tech Core, from the tech book. Oh, yeah. Dominic Ellis in our chat is confirming that it is called Alien Core. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Definitely. So yeah, we don't really know a whole lot about the GM book. We know that it's going to have a narrative Starship Combat rule set. And not a whole lot else. Now, how also Paizo
variant hacking?
Yeah, variant hacking was one of the things that was going to be in it. I know if this is anything like the Pathfinder versions of these books, the player core, the GM core, basically they both launch at kind of the same time, and it's more like how D&D has a player's handbook and a dungeon master's handbook. Like, they're two books that you are supposed to use at the same time, and the players hold the one book and the GMs hold the other. What are your thoughts on that? Because I know that for a lot of us who have done second edition or have done the remaster, we're kind of used to it now. But as someone who is not, what do you think?
I think it's silly, but, you know.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you're going to get to both anyway. I don't know how separate or exclusive either those rule books are anyway.
Like, yeah.
As a player, you're going to want to know how the game is run. Eventually,
right? that's kind of my thought about it too. I feel like the number of rules overlap is high enough that I'm not a big fan of the split either. I thought that Paizo did it better when they put it all together, but I also understand them not wanting a 500 page book scaring away people from trying their game. But I don't know, I guess those people just need to be okay with a 500 page book. Like, it's still 500 pages. It's just got two different cover pictures now instead of one.
Yeah, but you know, nobody read the original Pathfinder cool rulebook, so I get it.
Oh my god, if Perrim could hear you, he would put up his fist and try to defend his honor, saying that he read that book page to page, and then you would keep calling him a liar.
I mean, even if he did, on the off chance he actually did, good. Thank what, do you want a medal? You're like one of like a dozen people.
I write for this game. I have not read that book cover to cover. I've read that book as needed. Like, because I mean, like, let's be real. If you're playing if you're a GM and you're going to run an adventure path, do you need to read the rules for how to design magic items? Do you need to read the rules for how to design monsters if you're just going to run it out of the adventure path?
No.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like it's a more efficient way to, and also, like, the best way to learn the game is to do it at the table. That's one of the reasons why James and I were saying, like, don't be afraid of being wrong, because the best way to learn a game is to sit down, play it, and then have to look things up when it happens, you know.
Yeah, and you know, it's okay to make table decisions. One of my like formative times in this game was playing at a table with somebody who really knows the game well, and it was a Pathfinder society scenario, and an enemy went prone because he was running the game and shot a bow while prone, and two of us at the table went, I don't think you could do that. And the person was like, wait, what? I can't just shoot from prone. It's like, yeah, no, it's on like the ranged attack rules. It's like, oh, well, I'm wrong. And that was great, because everybody's just like, hey, we think this is wrong. And we checked it out. And it was great. And it made us all feel better about being wrong.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like when you have a game like Pathfinder that is essentially trying to get into the nitty gritty, like it's trying to mimic the verisimilitude of the real world, essentially, right? And a lot of designers hearing me say the word verisimilitude just rolled their eyes at me inside, because that term verisimilitude is kind of like the designer bane. It's you put it in a designer's mouth and they start choking. But ultimately, like, that's the nature of the situation. I'm playing a game called Monster of the Week right now with some of my friends in my Warcraft guild. And that game is literally like, you want to do the thing, you roll the die. If you roll 2d6, if you beat this number, you do the thing. And that's it. That's all the rules in the game. And it's good for that game. But when you are trying to like have in-depth tactics and strategy, it means that there's going to be a ton of rules. And that means you might not know all of them at any time. And you just have to look them up and be okay with it. Like in the game James and I are playing, one of the things that I'm constantly dealing with is the fact that I have forgotten more about Pathfinder First Edition than many people who played that game ever knew. And I'm just constantly like, oh, I should know this, and I know that this is a hole in my memory that I don't like. I can see the hole of the core knowledge that should be here, and just like in Inside Out, just dropped into Imagination Land, is being thrown in the dumpster now. It's great. That's you're gonna forget things, you're not gonna know things, just be okay with it. That's why we print it.
Yeah, that's why it's there. So once we get all these things, we can hopefully make a bunch of mistakes and maybe even find some stuff that really works together well or not well that we didn't think of ahead of time.
Yeah. Now, what's one rule that you're hoping for in GM Core that they haven't announced yet, which is most of them, since the only thing we really know is the Starship stuff?
stamina for player characters, if it's going to be different than in the Pathfinder 2nd Edition variant rule.
Yeah, and I kind of hope so, because in the Pathfinder 2nd Edition variant rule, it basically just splits your hit points in half and says when you rest for 10 minutes, you get all these back. And that kind of doesn't put back the Starfinder feel, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. In Starfinder 1st Edition, characters are tanky. They can take a few punches and be okay. So I would very much like to see a rule. Honestly, I'd rather see the hit points that they currently have be stamina, and then just getting a separate point of wound points that can't be healed by like the medicine skill or something like that. Like, just something that gives a little bit of weight to the situation. But we'll see what they end up doing. Nobody really knows. I think if I had to pick one rule from Starfinder that I would really like to see in that book, I would really like to see some variant of the chase rules. I think Starfinder had a really good set of chase rules. As somebody who had to write with them for an encounter in my adventure path, I like them, and I would like to see them be more than just a victory point system. Like, I'm totally fine if they use victory points as the method of tracking them, but I'd like to see some actions like for speeding up, slowing down, doing things. Like, I just don't want it to be just skill checks. That's boring.
Yeah, 100%, 110%.
Zerg Titan 99 adds, GM Core apparently has rules regarding crossing Starfinder and Pathfinder either way, along with some fun art of the Pathfinder iconics in Starfinder and vice versa. So here's my hot take. I am more excited to see the Starfinder characters in Pathfinder than the other way around. I want you to show me like one of the Kasatha or the Sheeran or the Vesk wearing like medieval Pathfinder armor. That's way more exciting to me. I don't know.
It has a better analog. It's like going to the Renaissance fair versus people being launched into the forward time and not screaming all the time, you know?
Right. Yeah. I've seen enough Samurai Jack. Show me a kid in King Arthur's court. That's what I want. No.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And honestly, that section doesn't surprise me, because that section existed in first edition Starfinder's book, where they have that legacy section. I actually don't have to hope that it will be better balanced, since they use the same system. It will be better balanced, because man, oh man, anytime I've seen anything from Pathfinder first edition put into Starfinder, it hasn't been a fun time for the Starfinder players.
No, that flat math does not let you survive most encounters, even with
better. Oh my god. Gosh, do you remember that that scorpion lady you threw at us in one of the plays? Yeah. Oh my gosh, we just used her right out of the Pathfinder first edition bestiary, and her saving throw was so high that nobody could pass it except on a nat 20.
Yeah, it was like a DC 27 fortitude save at 12th level, and that was like hard for Starfinder characters.
Yeah, it was hard. We died. James killed all of us. Our bones never left that arena.
Yeah, it wasn't a good look for them.
No. But you know what is a good look for us? The Monster Manual, or in this case, Alien Core.
I hate the core thing, but whatever.
Oh, you don't like the word core?
No, I think it's, I don't know.
Tell us. People are here listening for our thoughts. If they just wanted the news, they would have gone and listened to the podcast themselves. They want to hear our takes. Do the take, James.
It's just core. It doesn't tell me anything. Like, I don't know. It's not a descriptive enough word to me. I guess it helps people that are new, but for me, it's just, you just say the thing and then you put core after it. But it's like, what isn't core? Like,
yeah,
there are going to be books that aren't core. Like, I don't follow the logic, but I'm also not somebody into the 2E scene where that maybe makes more sense.
Now, let me ask you, what would you rather the name be, keeping that naming convention of player blank or play or GM blank?
I would prefer what Starfinder 2nd Edition had.
So like core rulebook and what was it? The Starfinder rulebook. They really didn't have a GM book in Starfinder. It was sort of just the Galaxy Exploration Manual.
Yeah, I know. I'm not big on a separate GM book, so
that's fair. I So my thought on it is that I like when player and GM, like, I think the rules to play the game should be together, because part of what a good rule book should be is it should be a physical embodiment of the social contract at the table, which means everybody is playing the same rules, right? And so this is how we play, and this is what we agree to. And I feel like nothing is really stopping you from going out to buy and buying the GM core and reading it if you're a player. But at the same time, taking all of those GM rules and putting them somewhere else doesn't feel good to me. And if all the core rules for playing the game, like how to do combats, how to take actions, if all that is only in the player book, then the GM book isn't really all that useful for GMing. It's just an idea book. So like I actually pick up what you're throwing down and kind of agree with it. It doesn't bother me. I don't love it.
Yeah, it's ultimately a minor hangup. I have so many other things to actually dislike and worry about. This is small potatoes.
Oh my God, I want to know, James. We should do an entire episode of the things James dislikes.
Oh God, please, no, I don't want to do that. It's going to be existential and awful. Let's not do that. That's not a good show idea.
Okay, we won't do that one then. Maybe, maybe a blog. No, I don't think I could get James to sit down and write a blog.
No, I'd much rather talk about things I like. better show.
That's fair. That's fair. Now, looking back at Alien Archive, Alien Core. I'm going to call Alien Archive forever. I wish they just kept it.
That's what I'm doing. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
just so no, from here on forth, forever, James and I are probably going to call this Alien Archive. It's such a. I love alliterations. I can't not. They're so good.
Yeah. Brain go burr.
Now the one thing that I want to know, right, are they going to do this like Pathfinder second edition where every one of the alien or the bestiary core books is like only stat blocks, or are they going to do it like Starfinder first edition and put like player facing rules elements in this book? Because like, on one hand, like, I get them wanting to stuff the book with stat blocks, and for GMs, a lot of GMs are like, yo, I need stat blocks. Please do the work for me so I don't have to write my own. Just give me as many as possible. But man, oh man, I always felt like the Alien Archives felt more inspired because they were willing to give me things that weren't just like GM stuff, you know, like they gave me feats or unique items I could give out as a reward. Like if I have an alien from a far away galaxy or whatever, or a faraway solar system, and it's got a really special unique gun, that gun is printed here, it's so cool, and the players can buy it, or there, here are stats for how to use this as an animal companion, here's a cool spell that this guy has that is very common on his home world that your players may never have seen before. That just feels so much more flavorful to me because like it makes the galaxy feel bigger. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It feels like you're reading an adventure atlas instead of just a textbook.
Definitely. So what do you think? What do you think we're going to get? Because I think I know my answer, but I'd like to hear yours.
I feel like we're going to probably end up retaining at least some of the player options in them. I don't know. I feel like if they just go to the straight bestiary textbook style, that's more of an NPC guide rather than an actual like Alien Archive.
So I actually think the opposite. I think they're going to do what Pathfinder did. And I think that because that book is successful in Pathfinder, they're going to do what has been proven. And I don't necessarily think that what has been proven is what is right. But, you know, Thirsty got to sell them pages.
Yeah, true. True. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm still going to use it.
Yeah, that's sort of the thing. It's like, I might not think that this was as good as it could have been if it gave me a new spell instead of like one more stat block for what this thing looks like as a chrysalis instead of as a butterfly. But you know, at the end of the day, stat blocks are very useful. I will say that one of the things that has always puzzled me about Pathfinder second edition is like, they were basically like, we're going to do three core alien books, and then we're not going to do these big alien books, and we're just going to like do like theme stuff. So like, instead of having Alien Core 4, they have Book of the Dead, which is like got a combination of player options and a combination of NPC stat blocks for undead, and then like other stuff for undead. And honestly, I kind of would like that more, except maybe not needing to be so like that is the type of thing that we're talking about. Like, that's what we would like. But I think I also would like it not needing to be like one specific thing. Like, I don't need it to just be a book about undead or just be a book about elementals or just be a book about nature things. I kind of would like it just to have the mix, period. A little bit of texture in your food is a good thing.
Hmm. I mean, I think having a theme is strong. You can sprinkle a couple other stuff in there, but I think themes are good.
Mm. Oh, look, I'm being corrected. NPC core has player stuff in it. A couple of guns and also wands and staves and some spells. So NPC core that's not the same as monster core, though, right? NPC core and monster core are different in Pathfinder. I think monster core is the one that is a core rulebook line, and NPC core is like a newer book that just came out. And I do like that. One of the things that's been very cool that I've seen, James, from this new NPC core book that just came out is they added a NPC stat block for something called a gun witch. And I very much would like to know more about how I too can play a gun witch in all of my tabletop role-playing games.
That sounds cool, but why is it core if it's not core?
That's a good question. It's technically not core, not unless they're going back and like they're expanding what the core assumptions are. Like, I don't know. They told us that the original pillar of like the core products was the Advanced Player's Guide, the Player's Handbook, the GM's Book, and I think Monster Core 1 and 2. So like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Are we just going to add more core forever now?
Yep. Like, we're just going to say core at the end of every book? Okay.
No, I just don't know. I don't know what the point is. Like, it kind of makes like if you're gonna add more core after you've already established your core, why would you call it core in the first place? Just call it NPC. I don't know.
We should just call ourselves No Direction Beyond Core.
Oh my gosh! I feel like the Prime team would be mad if we start. Well, that'd be really funny because they'd be Prime and we'd be Core. Like, sorry guys, I know you're No Direction Prime, but we're No Direction Beyond Core. This means we're the core experience for going beyond with No Direction. Does that mean anything? Not really.
but it's a lot of buzzwords.
It's a ton of buzzwords, man. There's going to be so many people that Google, what's the core No Direction Beyond experience? No Direction Beyond
Core.
Core. Oh my gosh, should I start putting core on all of the title cards?
No, let's not confuse people, just like how I'm confused. Okay. You got any other final thoughts?
My final thoughts. Overall, I felt like the stream was a lot of things we kind of already knew from different streams put in one place, and I appreciated that. I wish there was a proper blog summarizing it somewhere because that makes my life easier. Honestly, the thing I am most excited for out of everything they've talked about, and there is one footnote. They talked about a digital hero deck that's coming out. And I honestly, that was like a blip on my radar because I'm way more excited about the novel. I think the novel is the most exciting announcement they made, but I am a lore nerd. So what about you?
I was just happy to hear them speak with such a reverence and passion about it. I know we've interviewed these people, but hearing that when they're not talking to you is a good thing as well.
Definitely when we don't have them on a camera, you know, like having everybody and you know, also like not naming names, but we've had people on the show before where like we would talk about things and it felt like James and I were carrying all the passion, and that is not something that has happened with the current team that we have had on. Like, they've been pumped, they've been excited, this is their work, they're happy to show it, they're very proud of it. Like, that's what we want. We want the energy, we want the passion, and we want the respect for what this is and a looking forward guidance blasting off into the future.
Yeah, 100%.
But if you want to blast off and find us into the future, where can our listeners go, James?
You can go to nodirectionpodcast.com. I think that's the whole URL.
You did also, it, yes.
We have a Discord.
We do. If you go to nodirectionpodcast.com, there is a link on there. You click the link, it gives you a Discord thingy, and you pop on, and you can say hi to us whenever you want. James and I are always around. We answer every question that people send at us. You can ping us, and we will answer. We typically try to give our shout-outs of when we're going to do this show. When I'm not getting root canals, it's the last Wednesday of every month.
And usually it's on Twitch, but our network, I'm going to call him CEO, is on vacation and can't two-factor with that. So
No. He's like out in the middle of the ocean or something on this somewhere. And yeah, I don't know. But James and I were like, we're not going to be able to. And this whole thing happened specifically because of my root canal, because if I was able to talk last week, we could have just done it. And then yeah. he would be here. And it's very good.
It's fine. YouTube streaming is A-okay.
Yeah, I know. I know you're a big fan of the YouTube medium.
Yeah.
So what is the coolest thing you've got going on right now, James? Something cool and nerdy that you're up to.
Oh, I'm nothing that's marketable. I'm just playing a lot of Foxhole. I'm just got a second job.
That's fair. Also, I have a second job now too, but I don't treat it like a second job. The new World of Warcraft season is up, so now I am in the mine with the goblins. It's very fun. I get to experience the content in a way that is fun and healthy for me, unlike one of our friends who it is literally his second job because he's a mythic raider.
the way the game should be played.
Oh my god, no, I can't do it. I can't go back. Until next time, go beyond with no direction.